It ends at Liverpool, of course, and you return to Port Adelaide, and your side is one of the fittest, if not the fittest, in the comp, and you base it on a pre-season tour of the UAE and a lot of philosophies around heat training, and it's wildly successful. But after a game in 2017, your phone rings unexpectedly, and on the other end of it is the then Arsenal CEO, Ivan Gazidis, who's now at AC Milan. Surprised, Darren? Oh, might be an understatement.
Yeah, it was. The night before, I'd been at a property in Oakbank and had phoned my accountant that day and said, how much can I afford to spend on this property? I'd sort of planned to live on a big acreage and just live happily ever after, and I'd get a couple of horses and that was it. So yeah, it was a massive surprise, and I didn't quite believe it at the start. It was late one night, and turned into be a pretty important phone call.
It did, because before you knew it, you're in a Nice hotel opposite Arsene Wenger. I mean, this is a surreal weekend spent in on the Côte d'Azur there. What actually happened? And was it as much probing as one can do of another? Arsene was pretty keen to find out if you were the real McCoy.
Yeah. It was actually Champions League final night. And I'd left. We played Hawthorn on a Thursday night at Adelaide Oval, and the Friday morning I was on the first flight out, and I got back to Adelaide Monday morning by 9:30 a.m. Landed. Arsene had some meetings, I think, with Kylian Mbappe, in fact, as it turned out, to try and lure him to Arsenal. And so I went for a run along. Yeah. I got there and I was absolutely exhausted, and I went for a run along the strip there in Nice. It was in the middle of summer, so it was magnificent. Just thought, this is a good start to the weekend, and came back and met Arsene and Ivan, and then Ivan left and just left me with Arsene, and he just asked me every football question that he could possibly ask, because I don't think he believed that this guy from Australia knows much about football. So he knew an incredible amount about Australian football. He was just one of the most intelligent people on all aspects of life, really, that I've ever met. And wow. So, yeah, we spoke all night. Then we watched the game, went to dinner with him after the game. I was falling asleep during the game, which I was just telling myself, stay awake, stay awake, stay awake, you know. You're watching football against someone you're trying to convince you know about football with Arsene Wenger, like, and I'm drifting off, you know. It was and then the next day we met again for breakfast, and I was on a plane by 10 a.m. And Ivan just said to me, keep the Wi-Fi on the plane. I'll send something through to you. And I had a contract to mull over on the plane on the way home. I think they were interviewing maybe four or five people for the role, and I must have done something right, I guess. That was that meeting. It was, pretty surreal to think about, but it was a great experience.
Darren, the Gunners were having a really nasty time with injury around the time of your appointment. There was a lot of frustration there. Was there, I don't know if distrust is the right word, but was Arsene still wary of you when you got to the training facility? I think your office got plonked right next to his. What were those first sort of weeks and months like?
Yeah, that was tough. There was distrust amongst the coaching and the staff that I was brought in to supervise, manage, lead, whatever term you want to use. So that was tough. What did help was that aspect that you just mentioned. My office was next to Arsene, so he saw that I turned up when he did. I left after he did. I spoke football a lot with him. Was able to, I've told this story a couple of times, but there was a lineup outside his office from people. And I remember on day four or five, I thought, what are these people? Is he not in there or something like that? And I had to ask him about a training session coming up, and I just knocked on his door and walked in, and he was sitting there drawing up some drills. And I said, oh, by the way, player A, B, or C is back from leave or whatever. I had to go. And they were just waiting for him to come out. Such was the revere that he was sort of held in to speak to him. But I guess the Aussie-ness of me just went, oh, I need to ask a question, so I'll go and do that. And Yeah, we had a conversation on his last day, and he said, I didn't believe in your process, but I now know that your process and your methods, his exact words were, I'll never forget them because it was a nice thing to say. The players have a level of physicality that I haven't seen them have before. If we had have done this 7 years ago, we would have won more championships. So it was a really nice thing to say on his second to last day in the job. So yeah, that gave me a lot of satisfaction that the hard work had resonated with one of the, the most prolific managers in the game.
And I mean, we talk about coaches being under pressure here and how tough it is, and of course it is. But what about Wenger's final months? I mean, 22-year stint, of course, he was under, what would you say, global pressure and global scrutiny, wasn't he? And just enormous at the time.
It was like he had built that club, and we probably don't appreciate it over here because, clubs are built by boards and the AFL tips in money, and but he had single-handedly turned that club around into the force that it had been and that it was, and built the training ground, built the stadium, oversaw every aspect of it, and yet the fans were turning on him, incredibly quickly. And we had people spitting on him over us on the bench, and we'd turn up to games in Eastern Europe, and fans were booing him, and it was just extraordinary the pressure that he was under, and yet you just would not know it. He just held himself because he believed in a certain philosophy and a certain way to do things, and he just held true to that. So the pressure was as intense as I've seen on any human, in sports, certainly.
Yeah.